There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Tuesday. Reminder here, or if you're new, phone number and the text line, they're the same. I had to make it easy for me. 343-0106. 343-0106. Maybe you want to put that in your contacts with 56 hours a week of live local shows that come from the opulent, the gold-gilded studios of FM Talk 106.5 near Airport and 65. You'll have a show, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday live shows you may want to interact with, and the phone number works on all of them for a text or a phone call, 343-0106. And if you have the FM Talk 106.5 app that is free and pretty darn cool, if you download that, of course, you can stream the station on it and you get all our podcasts. That's the first place they post traffic maps, weather information on there, show schedules. But in addition, there's a microphone icon on the front page there. If you'll press that, lets you record a message, emails it to the show, and I can play it back. So just another way to get in touch with us here at this show and throughout the week on FM Talk 106.5. All right, and those numbers are important too, because it is, you know, it's very interesting too how people get down the schedule. Last week at this time, people said, "Where's the sheriff, Sean? It's the second Tuesday of the month, and where's the sheriff?" And I said, "Hold on, y'all. I'm glad y'all caught that. You pay attention, but we call an audible, and this month is one of them. And today, the third Tuesday, is when we talk to Mobile County Sheriff Paul Birch. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Yes, there's a few times we move things around, but
yeah.
They were on the text line going, "Where's the sheriff? It's second Tuesday."
Yeah, we had the Alabama Sheriff's Conference last week, and so I had to attend there.
It happens yep. A few times of the year. I want to a couple things as we get started here. First of all, I saw the story today. I heard the update from WKRG about the ceremony today for canine, the canine malice. One of y'all's, what do y'all call them, fur missiles?
Yep. They're affectionately referred to as fur missiles.
Now, what is the story? How did he die? How did Malice die?
He was tracking a felony suspect for another agency who asked for assistance and collapsed during that track. About a mile into the track, so he was a young dog. So we don't believe it was heat
right.
or anything like that. Don't really know what caused the death. But he was, actively engaged in the tracking of a felony suspect.
You know, I think about from just the bond that people get with dogs. First of all, you got that bond. And I don't want to look past that, but I also do want to look into the importance of that loss as a loss of training. I mean, for before a dog becomes part of canine for Mobile County Sheriff's Office, like, give me an idea how much training that dog has.
They've had some extensive training before we picked them up. We buy them out of state, and there's a couple of different locations that we purchased them from, and they're very, very expensive.
Yeah.
And months, if not a year, of training between that particular handler and that dog, goes on continuously. So it's, there's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah, so it is a loss, not just, I saw people on Facebook emotional about the, dog dying. People don't like that. But I also look at it in just, maybe this is a colder side. I'm not trying to be cold, but there's a lot of experience in that dog that you
there
lose.
There is. I mean, like I said, he was young. He's 4 years old. We've got two that we're about to retire.
Well, I was going to ask you next, when's retirement for dogs? When do they get to retire?
About 6 to 8 years in service.
Okay.
And like I said, we've got two that we're retiring in about 2 weeks.
Okay.
And, we're searching for replacements for them, and we will have replacements in place before they're retired.
What, do they stay with the handler, or what happens to those
Typically,
dogs?
Typically, yes.
You know, I know one of your handlers here quite well, and I know that relationship you were talking about built, you know, you get the dogs, but then that relationship between the handler and the dog, they're partners. I mean, they get each other.
They are, and, you know, not just the handler. That canine becomes part of the, you know, the family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just, you know, so it affects an entire family, not only, you know, the handler and his, you know, his or her wife or husband and kids, you know, but the sheriff's office family as a whole. I mean, that's, you know, we interact with those special operations units frequently, and, mm-hmm. and get to see the dogs in action, which is an amazing thing to see. And so, you know, it's a loss for everybody within the sheriff's office family and the handler and his family.
You know, it's interesting as well, as much as we'll talk about technology that y'all use in law enforcement now more, you know, every day, it's a big part of what y'all do. But then here's the importance of man's oldest friend. You know, I mean, it's, there's all this high tech stuff. And then here we are also talking about the value of a dog.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, there's not only the cost of the training and you know, the original purchase, you know, the special equipment that has to go into the vehicles, you know, where you know, the handler can hit a button and open the door and then come out. The temperature has to stay controlled,
mm-hmm.
you know, if the canine's in the vehicle, so that it a lot of money goes into the canine program.
Now, top uses for canines for y'all, the top uses for the dogs, like what would you list, you know?
Tracking suspects.
That knows.
Tracking and apprehending.
Okay. And how, you know, you use them to obviously track and find the person, then to grab on, you know, people that. But how often does that keep your deputies, or if they're in a municipal setting, a police officer, how often does that keep them out of harm's way? I mean.
Yeah, it keeps the deputies, you know, safe when we deploy a canine, but it also keeps the community safe. If we've got a fleeing felon who, say, has bailed, either burglarized a house or, mm-hmm. or bailed from a vehicle running through a neighborhood, the faster we can apprehend that suspect, the safer the community is.
Right. And not saying you don't have some track stars as deputies, but none of them are as fast as a dog.
They are not.
You do a race saying, whoever the fastest deputy is, all right, y'all, we're going to do a little sprint here.
Yeah, well, you know, rule of thumb, if you do deploy a canine, stay still.
You're not going to outrun it.
No, and if you're running, you're going to get bit.
It likes that more.
Yep.
Yeah, it's funny, too. We've talked about this during Mardi Gras. Once again, with deputies with weapons on their hip, and, you know, lethal, non-lethal, all these things. People are like, yeah. You're trying to move people at Mardi Gras. Y'all get on the horses at Mardi Gras, and it's like, we showed up, we parted the Red Sea. You're like, why is everybody moving? Oh, there they are on the horses. That's why, you know, it's funny how with the technology and all these things, horses and dogs are still being used as part of what y'all do in the sheriff's department.
Yeah, and you could apply the same at Metro Jail. You know, we do have some uprisings periodically where, you know, nothing major, but you'll get mm-hmm. a group that refuses to go back into the cells or go back into the pod. You know, and we have a special response team of corrections officers that have the taser shields and mm-hmm. like, that don't seem to affect them. When we send the dogs to the jail,
that does.
They can't get in that cell fast enough.
It's just interesting that, you know, the kind of the old idea is still being current in there. You mentioned the jail, too. So hearing this week about overcrowding in the jail, where are you right now?
We're at 1491 this morning.
And what's full?
1187.
Yeah. Okay. So. Do you have the issues at a jail level, at a county level, that the state does with, you know, the Judge Thompson, I think, is the overseer with the overcrowding Alabama prisons. Do you have those same issues at a jail at this level?
We do. Yeah, overcrowding is always an issue. You know, the jail was built, you know, many years ago, and I don't think there wasn't a lot of foresight for growth when
right.
it was built, and we're pretty much out of real estate mm-hmm. in the area of the jail. But we are going to have to do something to ease the overcrowding.
But so can they come in the way they did for the prison system and require, like DOJ or somebody, require it? Or what?
They can, and you know, and I'll say we're probably on the brink of that. And
wow, okay,
you know, what has helped, the state has been a little better about picking up their state inmates.
Because you had talked about that before, that they would leave them here. They would come in to have a hearing or something and leave them, or
yep. And you know, and another situation is, you know, the we as sheriffs throughout the state stick together. And you know, when the tornado a year or so ago that tore down, you know, the jail up around Selma,
yeah.
You know, we've got 20 of their murder and capital murder. You know, I mean, there's a lot of the counties took different ones, but we still have 20 taking care of. Dallas County 20 is what we call them.
Okay.
And it's just something that you have to do to help out the other sheriffs. Their jail is still under construction. And then once that's done, you know, they'll be able to move them back over there. And I think they've, you know, building a better, you know, facility that will accommodate more.
Okay. So about building here, is that something that funding comes through the county commission, or how does that process? Let's say you do get a green light, you're going to do a new jail.
It does. I mean, the funding's from the county commission. You know, they can do bonds. You know, and I'll share an idea that I have, and actually this is a discussion that Jerry Carl and I have had several times. What I would really like to see in the future is a minimum security jail, you know, people who are not of any danger, mm-hmm. whether they're serving time on tickets, child support, something like that, and have a trade center attached to that where they can learn a trade.
Okay.
You know, where hopefully they don't come back to jail.
Sure.
And you know, that would be a really good way to help out the community as a whole.
So in the short term, have another place where those people that right now are right there off I-10.
They're taking up space, you know, where I could, you know, be housing just, you know, violent or
right.
significant, you know, repeat offenders in the main jail. Have a separate facility that's minimum security that would require less staff,
mm-hmm.
and then have a trade school attached to it, and hopefully, you know, not see them again, and,
right.
and they be out and be productive citizens.
Yeah, I mean, as you look at jail overcrowding and then prison overcrowding, how much of it has to do with recidivism? If these people didn't come back, would we have the same issues?
And again, as I you know, can't stress enough, it would be strictly for nonviolent offenders.
All right, we'll come back. More of your questions coming in right now on the text line at 343-0106. Your chance to ask the sheriff, our guest, Mobile County Sheriff Paul Birch, right here on Midday Mobile.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:23, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Ask the sheriff, your chance to ask Mobile County Sheriff Paul Birch questions. We'll get some from the text line and some from the phone lines as well at 343-0106. Damn Yankee asking this, Sheriff, said, in recent weeks, I've traveled to Pensacola and New Orleans via I-10. In both cases, we noted multiple state highway patrol and sheriff's department cars from Florida, Mississippi, and Louisiana, but not one in the Alabama stretch of I-10, not one.
Well, like I said, you know, I don't control, you know, Aaliyah, you know, as far as where they position themselves, but you know, I've said before that sheriff's office don't routinely work traffic. We don't have a traffic division. You know, we do have units on the interstate, but they're there for the purpose of interdiction, whether it be for drugs, human trafficking, those kind of things. So, you know, you may or may not see them because we've got several
may or may not
operations.
See them. It might take
but
it,
they're there.
Okay. All right. So if they're since we don't have the invisibility function, that tells me everything I need to know. So okay. The Sims guy said, if a bicycle has the right of way on a road, why don't they require a tag, lights, and so on?
I mean, that's it's not a motorized vehicle, so I think that's where the tag would come in. But, you know, they certainly, if you're going to ride on the roadway, you know, I think, you know, my opinion, you should have some flashing lights on your, mm-hmm. on your bicycle, as well as a bright colored vest. Because I've seen so many near misses while, you know, driving around town. And, you know, and I think a lot of what I have seen is it's been careless on the part of the person riding the bicycle. It's almost like they just dare, you know, people to mm-hmm. get close. They'll ride right on the edge rather than, you know, closer to. And there's a delicate balance. But, again, you know, I believe the tag issue is probably because it's not a motorized vehicle, and that's where, you know, the revenue comes in.
Although I will say that hadn't stopped. I think I have a pretty famous picture from last year where I was on Florida getting ready to turn westbound on Spring Hill, and in line in front of me was a Yamaha Timberwolf four-wheeler. Nice four-wheeler, but, I mean,
yeah.
In traffic.
We have seen those, too. And no matter how many times you preach it, you know, mm-hmm. people will get on there. And, you know, I've seen them running to the grocery store and seen them at gas stations, you know. Is what it is.
Vince saying here, and it's interesting because I was going to talk about this, about people getting hit. One of the people that came out to my house, out to the farm this weekend to ride, was somebody who has been hit. He was hit once in college and then hit as an adult in the hospital. Three of them were taken out by somebody just not paying attention. Three bicycles in a row, this older person hit them. His bike has every flashing light you can see on it. It's regular. You know, you can't miss it as he's riding. But Vince asked, how about the e-bikes? Because I talk about my e-bike and all. He said that thing has a motor.
That would probably be a question for the license commission office or you know, the state. I don't know what, you know, I know, say, for instance, a golf cart to be street legal mm-hmm. has to go a certain speed. Mm-hmm. I don't know if e-bikes reach that speed.
I know they're maxed out. Like mine is maxed out at 28 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Because at 28, something changes above there. So every time I have Clint Jameson on or something like that, we're talking about the e-bikes. People are always asking. I know I have never hit 28 on mine, but it's max. It's governed at 28.
Yeah, and that may be, you know, the parameters of it to keep it from being a per se motorized vehicle.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah, and I love bike riding. Mm-hmm. I've got a couple of nice bikes, but the way people text while they're driving today, I ride mine off of the main streets. I mean, just I'm not willing to risk. A lot of times I ride with my daughter too. Mm-hmm. Just not willing to risk that because I mean I passed three people on the way here, mm-hmm. just oblivious to the traffic ahead of them because they've got their face down on their phones.
Yeah,
I usually bump my siren and that gets their attention. But
that would do it. Jason says, "How would the sheriff say the crackdown on marijuana has gone? Have there been any arrests? Thanks."
We make frequent arrests. We've focused in some of the areas here recently where we get complaints. And
but every stoplight at the airport on the airport boulevard?
Yes, some of the convenience stores. And I will say, you know, I had an occasion to run to the store right nearby where this all originated.
Uh-huh.
And did not detect near as much as I had in the past.
Okay.
Hopefully we've got our message again. And I'll say it again. If you choose to do that in your home, it's still illegal, but keep it at home. You know, nobody out here wants to be, you know, seeing you riding down the road or sitting in a stoplight smoking a joint.
That's, yeah.
You know, it's still illegal,
but
just don't do it in public.
Yeah, I mean, we got a comparison we said in the past is for law enforcement not to engage because if some old boy's, you know, at the traffic light and got a can of Coors Light in his hand hanging out the window as he's riding down the road, y'all are going to see that and pull that person over. Then we get to a stoplight and it smells like, you know, Peter Tosh showed up at the street light. You're like, you know, it's just flagrant, I guess.
Yeah. And like I said, I can't speak for any other agency, but I can tell you, if a sheriff's deputy sees that, you're going to get stopped.
Okay, we'll get more questions. We come back at 343-0106. Your chance to ask the sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Paul Burch, our guest.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right at 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Tuesday, which, by the way, what do they always say? Programming note or something like that. This show live from the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo on Friday. Always love to go see the JCs and be on the island and be down there for the Liars Contest on Thursday and then Midday Mobile live from the rodeo on Fridays from noon to 2, and then we'll see you throughout the weekend. Y'all going to be busy down there?
We will. We don't have the problems down there that there were years and years ago.
I just spit take because I remember the kid down there in the 80s and some of the stuff I saw. I was wide-eyed. I'm like, this is wow.
It's kind of calmed down, but we always support Dolphin Island when they have an event like that, and you know, it's always fun.
It's gonna be another big year just talking to those guys. That it's grown so much because all of us that fish, but they've got all the music shows and the entertainment. People come down there that never even grab a fishing rod.
Yes, and that's kind of the purpose of the law enforcement presence, because there are a lot of people down there just for the entertainment aspect of it, which is great. It's great for Dolphin Island.
It is indeed. So, yeah, we'll see y'all down there. Mr. Doug says, why are the new sheriff's vehicles stealth? Isn't it safer to have neon reflectors like in Europe? And I don't know what that means. So can you help me understand what his question is, too?
Well, I don't know if he has seen a couple of the, you know, maybe SWAT vehicles that have the I guess more stealth look, you know, where it's not, and the term's escaping me, but you know, it's, you know, blends in.
Okay.
And that's for a purpose. But, you know, the regular marked vehicles have, you know, gray striping. They're clearly marked as sheriff, and they have a big gold star on them. Now, you know, we did clean up, you know, the look of the vehicles, you know, when I took office. And because I just like a nice clean look. And what we found with the two-tone paint, when we purchase new vehicles and get that two-tone paint, is adding another $3,000 to the cost of the vehicle. So now I order all black. The vinyl is like $350 to put on there, and just, you know, saves a lot of money.
$2,700 a vehicle. Yeah. Okay. Michael said, how do cops know who has weed in their vape versus nicotine? I smell weed everywhere. Is there a way for them to tell, or is it a non-issue now?
Well, I mean, if it smells like weed, you're going to get an inquiry, you know, or interaction with law enforcement. And, you know, based on, you know, we can seize it. And usually people that are doing that are going to have other things too, and then that vape will be sent off to the lab just like we would any other drug.
Okay.
And determine, you know, if it's, you know, has THC in it or not.
Ben says, in Baldwin County, it's illegal to drive a low speed vehicle on a road with a speed limit greater than 35 miles per hour. It doesn't stop people, but it's illegal. Is that the same for Mobile County?
I would be willing to bet that's a state law. Again, I'm not versed in all the, you know, traffic type, you know, I guess, ordinances or laws that we just don't typically deal with a lot. And we certainly don't see a lot of bicycle riding out in the county.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I would think Baldwin County would be some of the, I guess, inner city type places where you'd ride bikes.
We'll get back to the text questions, but I have some that I had for you, having you in here and knowing your, you know, decades in law enforcement and the different things you've done. Looking at the assassination attempt from Pennsylvania on Saturday, and people, everybody's armchair quarterbacking what they would have done. We got, you know, watching this video and that video, and had a lot of comment yesterday on it. Your years in law enforcement, watching that, your reaction to the situation.
Well, I was actually watching it live when it happened.
Okay.
And, you know, was in disbelief.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, fast forward to where there's, you know, been some other footage of the shooter and where the locations were. And, and this information about a law enforcement officer, you know, seeing him on the roof and getting back down. You know, I really don't, you know, like to armchair quarterback and mm-hmm. second guess another officer's, you know, reactions to something, because everybody reacts differently. But clearly, you know, there was a serious failure in the security of that, the entire event, you know, as it relates to the outer perimeter. You know, any position of elevation should have been locked down. And it's like, you know, it's been said on TV several times, you know, with an AR-15, 150-yard shots, nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you can do that with just fixed sights.
Mm-hmm.
And so how that was allowed to happen, you know, hopefully we'll know one day. You know, I can say, you know, there's obviously video out there of citizens pointing to the guy. And, you know, should have law enforcement started firing on him as soon as he was seen? Yeah, again, I hate the armchair quarterback.
Yeah, that's a tough
thing. Attention to it.
Yeah, it's a tough thing, too, because, I mean, I had my initial reaction there, like I think most people, but I always try to take, when I think something, I try to be my own devil's advocate and go, did the counter team know that he had the gun? Because, I mean, you're in a situation where that could just be anybody. Lord, you know, I'm still on the side, but I'm challenging myself to say, well, maybe they said they didn't see the gun or something like that. And you can't go shooting somebody who happens, like somebody who wanted to get a better view of the thing or something like that.
In a prone position.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out what would keep them. Yeah.
That I'm sure that, you know, those weapons have. You know, I don't see any way you couldn't have seen a gun. Again, wasn't there. I'm not armchair quarterback. And, you know, one thing that I'm wondering and waiting, you know, patiently for the investigation to play out is, did that sniper have to wait on permission to take that shot?
I keep hearing different things here, right? I hear waiting or they had to go ahead. I don't know that either. I'm interested. But I think the thing that nobody can really argue is this idea that building should have been locked down.
Absolutely. Right?
And you've said, like, you've done these things before. We've had Trump in town before. We had President Obama in town. When y'all work with Secret Service, this is a thing. You lock the buildings down.
There are meetings that go on weeks prior and then leading up to the event. You know, when Obama was in town, I was, you know, much lower rank and was along a stretch of Dolphin Island Parkway going toward the island, watching a driveway of a building, and to not let anybody turn in that driveway. And again, that building had already been cleared, and you know, just,
right. You take the building.
You stand a post.
So y'all identified in those meetings beforehand. Here's buildings that could give an angle of a shot, right?
Yep.
A view. Then you go. Then that building gets, you said, locked down. So nobody in that building while the motorcade's going by or whatever. Is that?
That's pretty much, you know, the premise behind it. And again, that's something impressive to watch, too, if you've never seen it in person. Those motorcades run about 80 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Anything in front of it gets out in the roadway is toast. And so that's pretty impressive to watch in person if you ever have that opportunity.
It's and to see that go through, I know they don't stop, but the building's on the sides. I'm trying to make sure that I'm coming at this honestly, that building 130 yards away should have been locked down.
It should have been locked down.
Okay. Yeah. There's no, because people I talked to over the weekend that had some experience in it, they said, you know, it's 360 degrees. It can be as much as 2,000 yards around this. Any building that would give a vantage point, you know, these are the areas outside the magnetometer, that those are locked down and nobody can go in. Even in high rises, as one guy was telling me, worked a thing in a city, and like a whole bunch of businesses were in this place, and nobody went to work that day because they said you can't because we can't let anybody in there.
Yeah, I mean, and again, this shows exactly the reason why, and you know, but that was, you know, you not only look at the point of elevation, you know, being on a roof, but just a direct line of sight,
mm-hmm.
you know, to President Trump.
Yeah,
and again, there was a law enforcement failure. You know, where that failure come in, I'm sure will come out, you know, soon enough.
David from the text line said, what impact will the imminent retirement of Baldwin County Sheriff Hoss Mack have on Mobile County, if any?
You know, it won't have a lot of impact. You know, I've got a great working relationship with Sheriff Mack. I have a great working relationship with Chief Deputy Anthony Lowry, who will, you know, become the sheriff, you know, when Hoss retires, and, you know, he's now going to be the we voted last week at our conference. He's the executive director of the Alabama Sheriff's Association. And you know, he's actually in Montgomery meeting with the governor today to hammer out some of those details.
I talked to him when he was on the show with me. I just said, I know part of this job is going to be, well, in Montgomery, and especially during session, you know, in the, because this is something that all 67, there's things that happen in session in Montgomery that absolutely are important to sheriffs in every county in the state.
There, I mean, we stand together on a lot of issues that, you know, I guess are legislative issues, and you know, Hoss has a lot of experience in going to the legislature, and he has relationships up there, so there couldn't have been a better pick to be the director of the association.
Vince asked, he said, I know this is a city issue, and it's been talked about before, but holy crap, there's a huge problem in Tillman's Corner with homeless people. I just went through there and saw at least 25 to 30 homeless people.
I'll get my guys on it. We have, you know, the sheriff's office has worked with the second precinct of MPD, and I think has made a real big dent in it. And, you know, we have a unit that addresses that, and I'm sure one of them is listening right now and is probably already headed that way when he heard that. So, again, we don't mind if y'all call us when you see it, and because they move around from place to place.
I mean, right here where we are, there's a – I mean, it's not 25 or 30, but there's a contingent right here by the studios.
There is. You know, unfortunately, we a lot of it's mental illness, and you know, we can't arrest our way out of a situation.
And that's not where those – it's frustrating, I know, on y'all's level. That's not where those people need to go.
No.
Yeah, they need mental health care, and I know there's programs in the city to do that. But
And I'll say, like I said at the top of the show, I'd rather use the jail for violent offenders instead of, you know, people with mental issues.
Yeah, I mean, that. Where are we now from what was first term of Bentley, when the state basically just sent everybody back, right, to the county level?
Yeah.
And that was such a tax on police departments, sheriff's departments. Where are we from then to now? Have we made an improvement on dealing with that for y'all, or is it no
improvement?
There's
some improvement. We had a meeting last week where the city has negotiated with an entity here in Mobile for right now for 10 beds. And because there is a population in the jail, which, you know, personally I think is, you know, constitutionally wrong, that we can't release someone who don't have an address.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, now we will be able to release.
Have a place to release them to.
And
I didn't even think about that you can't release them from jail if they can't tell you where they're going.
Right. The people there are for mental health issues. So, and so,
oh, wow.
You know, this will be a huge help because, it, you know, once, you know, they'll go there, be assessed and you know, hopefully keep the process moving.
So even if somebody is, there's no reason to hold them anymore. But if they don't have an address, y'all can't release them.
That's correct.
Always learn something new. I'll tell you what, we'll go to the break here. We'll come back because I got more questions coming in at 343-0106. Your chance to ask the sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Paul Birch, our guest.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:51, FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile, your chance to ask the sheriff, our guest, Mobile County Sheriff Paul Birch. Adam asks, does the sheriff's department have a bomb-sniffing canine? We started the hour talking about the canines.
We do. You know, that they can detect bombs, they can detect firearms that may have been discarded during a chase. And so, you know, and they're separate from our, you know, patrol dogs that, you know, track and bite.
Can we talk about what else they can sniff? The SD, this is, if y'all hadn't heard this, you know, I thought, well, everybody knew about it because the dog came here to the studio and this and that. This is the most amazing thing. I'd tell people about the sheriff. They said, nah. I was like, y'all, it's a real thing. So talk about this dog.
Yeah, so, you know, SD can detect electronics, whether it be cell phones, thumb drives, floppy disk for those who might still have those.
Old school.
So, you know, she can, you know, we take her a lot on our ICAC warrants.
ICAC is
Internet Crimes Against Children.
Right.
You know, pedophiles, basically. And so she joins that team on all of their search warrants. Unfortunately, there are many more than I would like to see in Mobile County.
No joke.
There are a lot of perverts in Mobile County.
The side note, but I've said, if you fish a pond, if the bass in the pond aren't reproducing, every day you go catch you a limit. Eventually, it gets pretty hard to catch fish. But it seems like, there's not a real question. I just, when I see these stories, I'm like, y'all get a bunch of them. When does fishing get tough? You know, but it doesn't seem to be.
No, and it's, you know. It's just sickening to know there's that many people who are into child pornography.
Because if y'all are catching, and I don't know what the ratio
is,
but
a fraction.
Okay,
of them.
Then there's that many more out there.
Yeah.
And what he was talking about, Esty, when with the dog, so y'all could go in to some dirtbag's house, and you know they got the computer or whatever, and they may have hidden stuff. So if that SD card or that whatever is hidden somewhere in the house that you might not see it, a deputy might not see it, dog can smell it.
Esty can detect it.
Y'all think about
that. And alert. And, you know, we use her in jail occasionally. Every now and then we get word that a cell phone's been smuggled in. And so she can locate the cell phone. And once we narrow down the area where the inmates have it.
Yeah, it's talking to a buddy of mine that trained bird dogs with, you know, and we're talking about quail dogs. And he said, Sean, if that quail dog can smell that quail at 100 yards with a crosswind, it can sure smell a piece of electronics, at a further distance. He wasn't surprised when I told him. He said, think about what these dogs do on quail, you know. You can train them for anything.
It's my understanding that what she detects and dogs like her is the chemical spray that are on the computer boards within these different various electronics. So that's what she's actually smelling.
This is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So back to, there's the high-tech world with these SD cards, and then we go right back to the fact that a dog is a critical piece of law enforcement.
She is, and she's really good. You know, she's, you know, a non-biting dog.
Right.
And so,
well, she's a sweetheart, right?
She's really good at schools and different community events. You know, we also have a canine that's assigned to the schools that's not a biting canine, but she can detect drugs and firearms. So, you know, we'll use her a lot more this year.
Back to the theme of this show. We start off in the beginning. There's all kinds of stuff y'all are doing high tech. We talk about the high tech world of law enforcement, but we've talked about dogs and several horses here.
Yep.
And still a big part of what y'all do.
It is, and
it's pretty cool.
And it's a very integral part of what we do.
Michael says, when the sheriff leaves your studio, he can go to the I-65 exit and see at least 8 panhandling there. I am wondering about the camping portion after the Supreme Court ruling about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and I'm going to see if the Mobile City Council moves on this. Because in reading it, I'm no lawyer, but it seemed like this would give the ability of municipalities to say you can't be camping on public property.
Yeah, I would think so. I'm not super versed on city ordinances,
mm-hmm.
and because I hadn't been at the city in over 25 years, but yeah, I believe they have an ordinance now about, you know, panhandling with a sign at an intersection.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I saw, you know, one getting off the interstate on the way here.
Although I'd like to throw this in the mix to always cause trouble, but is there a difference between that person panhandling and when I'm heading to the island on Thursday or Friday, there's going to be somebody right there, right by the fruit stand, raising money for softball or whatever. They're in the road, too.
They are.
I mean, like I hate to say it because I'm not against the kids' softball team, but I'm, you know, how do you differentiate the person that's hustling for themselves versus, you know, fill in the boot or something like that?
Well, you know, a lot of it, you know, I think what I was just referring to, I think is includes like intersections where you're exiting the interstate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, I think there's some language in there pertaining, you know, to that, to on major thoroughfares. And, you know, but again, I would like to read up on a little more before I comment too specifically about it. So.
Yeah, and kind of back to that Supreme Court decision, I think it's more like they hadn't talked about it at council. I know Councilman Reynolds has, but I don't know what has happened where people are setting up encampments. You know, on private property, you can say you got to get them out of there. It's private, but like on municipal property, you know, can you tell them to leave?
Yeah, I think, you know, when it becomes an encampment, then you know, I think you have every right to tell them to leave because you're imposing on others who are maybe trying to use that particular facility. And, you know, it's not what it's designed for.
But the problem is if I'm the enterprising attorney, I'm saying, well, they're a citizen too. Whether they're homeless or not, they have the right to be there. You know, you can be there, they can be there. That's the tough thing.
Yeah, well, you know, but a lot of, you know, let's just say, you know, city property, a park, something like that, there are specific rules that say, you know, at sunset it's closed.
Right.
Yeah, and you know.
Which, by the way, we got like 30 seconds left, but I know talking to Commissioner DeWitt, we were talking about the different, who has law enforcement roots, talking about some of these great parks that are opening back up in the county, which I'm pretty excited about. And that you'll have people in the sheriff's department doing patrols on those places.
Yes, we do have dedicated personnel to patrol those facilities.
So keep them, you know, keep them to where everybody can enjoy them. They're not somebody taking over there doing the wrong thing.
That's right. And you know, Commissioner DeWitt likes to talk about what a great detective he was. Don't listen
to
all that.
Bad. Okay. Duly noted. Sheriff, as always, we appreciate you coming by. Probably see you down at the rodeo.
Yep. I'll be down there.
Mobile County Sheriff Paul Birch, our guest, coming back. Hour number two of Midday Mobile.